This is 99% Invisible. I'm Roman Mars. Your world has not been designed for you. In large part, it has been designed for the average person. Throughout your education, you've been given standardized tests and been graded by how well you perform compared to the average. Building codes, insurance rates, the Dow Jones, all these measurements are based around the concept of an average.
And it's okay. We know you're not average. You're really special.
Oh, thanks, Avery Truffleman.
Well, I mean it. You're not average. No one is. Not completely. But the concept of average affects us all.
Everything seemed to be based around this reference point of average. And obviously, everything about society is built this way.
This is Todd Rose.
I am the director of the Mind, Brain, and Education program at the Harvard Graduate School of Education.
He's also the author of the book, The End of Average. But to get to that, first, we have to start with the beginning of average.
The concept of average, as we know it, was pioneered by a Belgian mathematician and astronomer named Adolphe Quetelet.
Today, the way that most people get a handle on any set of numbers is to calculate the average. But in Belgium in the 1830s, Quetelet and other astronomers were some of the only people who did this.
If you were trying to time the movement of Saturn, you would etch little scratches on your glass of your telescope, and as soon as it crossed one, you'd start counting, and you'd stop counting after it crossed the other.
And they realized that if you had, say, 10 measurements, and they were all slightly different, if you added them together and divided them by 10, you'd get a better approximation of the true measurement.
Quetelet was the first to take this tool of astronomers and apply it to people. And Quetelet becomes a huge star. In his time, Quetelet was up there with the likes of Sir Isaac Newton. His science of averages was this remarkable cutting-edge way to assess the health, wellness, and progress of populations.
He's really active in the 1820s, 1830s, 1840s, all the way into like the 50s and 60s.
And the 1860s brings us to the U.S. Civil War and to another superfan of Quetelet's science of averages, Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln employs Quetelet's notion of average to calculate all kinds of things for the war. Food rations for the average man's body, musket designs for the average man's reach, and military uniforms for the average man's size. For the U.S. military, standardized average-based design becomes
a fundamental design philosophy from the Civil War forward.
So in 1926, when the Army was designing its first ever fighter plane cockpit, engineers measured the physical dimensions of hundreds of male pilots and used this data to standardize cockpit dimensions. Of course, the possibility of female pilots was never considered. Of course. And this cockpit design worked okay, up to World War II.
It became an Air Force war, right? That was the first time when the Air Force would be the determinant of who was going to win the war. And we absolutely ran out of pilots.
The government recruited hundreds of new pilots and expanded military aviation. They spent a bunch of money on fancy new planes. Although, the cockpits were still designed for the average 1920s male pilot.
They actually had a pretty massive decline in performance, including just a rash of deaths.
Pilots were dying all the time. Even after the war ended, just in training, they could not control their planes.
Some people thought, well, these ain't propeller planes anymore. Maybe these new pilots just can't deal with the new aviation technology.
And then they were like, well, maybe you got to train them better. And they did their better training programs, and that didn't work.
After blaming the pilots, the training programs, and the technology, it finally dawns on them, what if it's the cockpit? Maybe it doesn't fit us anymore.
Their first instinct is to think, we've just gotten bigger as a people, so the old average from 1922 is just too small, right? We're just bigger and badder, and let's build a better average.
So in 1950, researchers at Wright Air Force Base in Ohio were tasked with finding this new average. And one of those researchers was a man named Gilbert S. Daniels.
And he travels all over the country to different Air Force bases, and his job is to take these tape measures and just measure like 147 different dimensions of body size. And he says, I just want to do this side study. I want to know if we take the 10 dimensions of size that matter most for design, how many of these pilots are actually average on all 10 of those dimensions?
Daniels crunched the numbers, and of the 4,063 pilots he measured, not a single airman was close to average in all of the 10 dimensions. None.
So he quickly realizes, wait, now you know the problem. If you are designing something for an average pilot, it's literally designed to fit nobody.
And in this new era of jet-powered aviation, where pilots were making split-second decisions that could be life or death, it really mattered that pilots could reach what they needed to reach in a cockpit. The military sprang into action pretty much right away.
Air Force engineers and contractors designed adjustable foot pedals and adjustable helmet straps and flight suits and adjustable seats.
Once all the adjustable elements and other design solutions were put into place, pilot performance soared.
And of course, now we take this for granted, that equipment should fit a wide range of body sizes instead of standardized around one average.
When the military opted to design for a greater range of people, they designed for a greater range of opportunity. Take, for example, Kim Campbell.
She was a fighter pilot, and she flew a A-10 Warthog, and if it's worth Googling, it is like the baddest looking plane you're ever going to see.
In 2003, Campbell was sent on a mission to assist some Marines who were trying to take a bridge in Iraq. They were under heavy fire, but on her way back, her plane gets shot, and she loses all control.
She has the option to eject right there and save her life, but then the plane spirals into Baghdad and kills a bunch of innocent people. So she says, like, I'm not going to do that. She stabilizes it, which I don't even know how you do.
And she lands the massive, damaged, uncontrollable plane. It's an incredible heroic feat, really unprecedented. So, of course, Kim Campbell gets awards and distinctions, and she is someone who could have never been one of the best pilots in the world had the military not changed their design philosophy.
She's the beneficiary of a cockpit that's flexibly designed. When we think about how we design environments, you know, in a lot of fields, we've made some progress around accommodating wider ranges of people, but actually in things like education, we still actually design for this mythical average person under the assumption that if you design something that fit an average person, it would actually fit most people.
By re-examining the concept of the average and acknowledging its limitations, we can maybe start to consider other ways of assessing and categorizing test scores or clothing sizes or wellness or happiness or worth. We can pave the way for more people who are outside of the average. Because, really, no one is average. 99% Invisible is Delaney Hall, Kurt Kohlstedt, Katie Mingle, Sharif Youssef, Avery Truffleman, Emmett Fitzgerald, Taryn Mazza, Sean Rial, and me, Roman Mars. Edited for radio by Vika Aronson. We are a project of 91.7 KALW and Radiotopia. Find out more at 99pi.org.